Okay, first, if you could each just take 1 minute to introduce yourself, let us know what you've been up to over the last year, and then we'll start with questions. Dr. Murray, do you want to go first?
Sure. I'm involved heavily in a lot of different projects. My primary day role is as chief science advisor for iHerb. iHerb is one of the largest internet websites that sells natural products. They sell over 50,000 different products worldwide, and that's kept me really busy. I also just launched a program that I call Thrive, which is a free program that is kind of a collection of the things I've learned that have helped me to be healthy and vibrant. And it's a program that's a 21-day program where the people that go through it will get a 5-minute video from me and a 5-minute read a lesson. And at the end of the 21 days, they get a diploma that they've done the Dr. Michael Murray Thrive program. And I'm hoping to change people's lives, so I encourage people to get to drmurray.com and go through this free program. I think people really like it.
Great, thank you. Dr. Cousins?
Okay, well, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you, Steve. And Michael, it's good to see you. Okay, good.
Likewise.
My work has kind of expanded more internationally, so I speak in 26 different countries so far, recently. That's from Brazil to Central America to a tour I just finished in Europe. Presently, I'm living in Israel and about to start writing my next book, which is Spiritual Fasting. One of the messages I'm giving is that at any age, we can get healthier, stronger, clearer, and more expanded. This thing that Steve and I talked about the other day, 1600 push-ups, there's a message there. And I'll give you a brief message, it will make sense. When I was 12, I could do 60. When I was 60, I could do 601. That's 10 times more. Then I got this idea, well, let's just keep going and see what happens. So now I'm up to, I've been up to 2000, but the message is at my chronological age of 82, I am stronger and have a better sense of balance and vitality than I was when I was 60, than I was even a National Football Hall of Fame football player at 20. So that's a really important message to everybody. You don't naturally get older, you can get stronger as you
Yeah.
progress.
I love that. I play in the golf league on Sunday, every Sunday. And this last Sunday, I won this tournament. And, I'll be 67 next month. And I played golf this past week buddies from high school, and one of them used to be a very good golfer, and his game has slid. And I'm playing the best golf of my life. I'm playing the best golf of my life at 66. And even if you look at the at pro golfers, there's a decline with age. And Dr. Cousins, you're saying something that I believe in and have applied in my life as well, is that there are many things that we can get better as we get older. And there's certainly no reason for us to decline physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually as we get older.
Now, I'm going to make a cite a little research. This principle is so important. Dr. Ellen Langer from Harvard took people in their 70s, average age 75, and created for 1 week only an environment that was like 20, 25 years younger. And everybody was living in this environment. And at the end of that 1 week, there were marked physiological, not just mental, but physiological changes where they became younger. The fingers changed, I won't go through all the changes, but the point I'm making is in 1 week, they created physiological changes that were compatible with how they were 20 years before. What am I saying? Same thing you're saying. As our mental state creates a situation of younger or older, it plays a big role. And Dr. Ellen Langer's research really made the point. 1 week for reversing physiological changes back 20 years. So the world is as you see it, the world as you believe it to be, which is your world, which is my world. It's really remarkable, this message. And that's why we get into the push-up thing. People worry about, did you do the push-ups? That's not the point. The point is, with age, you can get stronger, you can get more flexible. I'm not sure what I'm going to do when I'm 90, but I have to deal with that. But this is a hugely important thing, and that's just what you're saying about the ball thing.
Okay, let me start with some questions. The name of our panel is Optimizing Wellness, Harnessing Nutritional Supplementation for Holistic Health. So we have a lot of speakers who we've asked a lot of questions about diet, and it's very tempting to ask you guys questions about diet based on all your experience. But for right now, what we really want to do is we really would like to understand what exact actions we should be taking. So what we're not looking for is motivation, inspiration, information about how the body works. That's not really what we need. What we really need is the code. If it was a safe, I would say, what are the four numbers of the code? When it comes to supplementation, there are thousands of people selling it. There are thousands of supplements. What we really want to understand is that if we were talking about food, we'd say everyone should eat broccoli, and everyone should eat broccoli sprouts, and everyone should get fresh air. But when it comes to supplements, without trying to teach us everything you know about supplements, help us make the list. Let's start out with what nutritional supplements, meaning vitamins, minerals, or anything in that category, everyone should ideally be taking. Now, if you're saying there is no list, we don't have to take supplements, that's fine also. But we have a pen and paper next to us. We want to write down number one. Then we want to write down number two. Then number three. We don't need to know about how magnesium works. We need the list of, with all the thousands of people telling us to take stuff and selling us stuff, we are confused. And this isn't as intuitive as food is, where you could just say what grows in nature. So the real question is, can you just break down, say, okay, number one, everybody take B12. No matter what, this is what you do. Number two, in other words, give us the formula, give it to us.
Easily done. There are four key supplements that serve as a foundation. One is a high potency multiple vitamin and mineral formula. And by a high potency, I mean one that's going to deliver the recommended dietary allowance of all known vitamins and minerals. That's a nutritional insurance policy, making sure that you're getting all the micronutrients that you need. In addition to that, people need to be taking additional vitamin D3, somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 IUs. There's just too much research out there to ignore on the value of vitamin D3, and most people are vitamin D3 deficient. So taking 2 to 5,000 IUs per day. Preferably, you're going to get a blood test that measures your vitamin D3 level and dose accordingly. But just to be sure you're getting that, I'd say 2 to 5,000 IUs each day. Next, everybody needs to be taking these long chain omega-3 fatty acids that we get from fish oil, algae oil, and krill oil. Depending on the form that you're taking, the key is getting enough of the EPA and DHA. Those are the key long chain omega-3 fatty acids. You need both of those. You need a total of 1,000 milligrams each day. In general, that's going to go across any of the forms. 1,000 milligrams per day is what's required to get your cells throughout your body full of these essential omega-3 fatty acids. Next and last, I think everyone can benefit from taking some sort of plant-based antioxidant. As far as supplements go, one of the most economical and the one that gives you the most bang for your buck is grapeseed extract. Grapeseed extract is rich in flavonoids. These are plant pigments, and the types of flavonoids in grapeseed extract are called procyanidolic oligomers, and these are very important in a variety of different functions, particularly the functions of our vascular system. So those are the four things that I would recommend: a high potency multiple vitamin and mineral formula, extra vitamin D3, a good pharmaceutical grade fish oil, and lastly, grapeseed extract.
That was pretty comprehensive. That was just pretty much what I would say, except one addition, carnosine. So, what do we need carnosine for? It's connected to amplifying, I'm just say, the telomeres.
Spell that, carnosine, spell it.
Carnosine. And that's connected to telomere length. So part of the issue when we're looking at this whole thing is, well, the longer your telomeres are, the longer you live, and the more functional you are. So everything Michael added, I tend to do a little bit more vitamin D. I like the blood value to be at least 80 or 90. I find that that sometimes takes me to, for people to, up to 10,000. But still, we're talking vitamin D. You know, we're not really differing that much. But carnosine is like a little subtle breakthrough here. I take the mega, you know, everything you said, I do. So I don't want to just repeat it, but to say, yeah, good. So that's one extra thing, though, is the carnosine in the bigger picture. The multivitamin will have the B12, it'll have the folic acid. I find a lot of people are deficient in B3. So now the other thing is, I'm going to just say, is minerals. And one of the most important minerals is salt, whole 82 mineral salt. Salt is stored in the bones. And one thing that's connected to osteoporosis is we're pulling salt and minerals out of our bones because we're so mineral deficient. So I want to emphasize the importance of that. And salt with the 82 minerals, you know, high energy. I'm not talking about sea salt because the sea is too contaminated. Actually is a very, very simple solution to this mineral deficiency. So that's the second thing I would add. Again, adding to what you've already said, which is very good, you know. So those would be, I'm going to say, that the two really big things. So one of the things is water. We have about 10.5 gallons of fluid in our system, and most people are dehydrated down to about 8.5 gallons. And the issue is, what do we do with that dehydration? So the salt helps hold the water. And so my third important supplement is clean, healthy water. Reverse osmosis. I will take distilled water, which is the easiest to count on because we're not worried about filters. And then I'll add to every gallon, a quarter of a teaspoon of whole salt, multi-mineral salt. So that's another really important basic. Now, another basic is oxygen. Why oxygen? Well, by the time people are 70, we've lost our oxygen capacity down by 50%. So what I do every day is what we call breathing exercises or pranayama, and that brings your oxygen, blood oxygen content back up to, the 99%. So those are very, very important elements in the picture. I'm going to add exercise. You've seen me dance. I love dancing. Okay, why? Why is dancing good? Because it's integrating mind-brain, and actually the brain-mind, and also body-brain become integrated when you're dancing and moving. Now, part of that is that dancing keeps your spine supple. If you notice with age, people tend to shrink. And in longevity, the whole idea is to get longer. Just think about that for a second. So when you're dancing, you're moving your spine around, you're actually getting longer. So I'm actually up to a half inch taller than I was at a younger chronological age. So this kind of movement, it's not just weightlifting kind of exercise, it's movement and flow that keeps you integrated. It also decreases anxiety and depression. Research has to show that. I'm talking about dance. And it also reverses and helps improve your cognitive condition. It helps cognition. So these are kind of the elements. Air, water, pretty basic, but you gotta take it in. The salt holds the water. Pretty basic. So those are things. And I'll just make a note about the salt. There's a kind of, I'm gonna say a rumor. You don't need salt, but also a salt causes high blood pressure. The research doesn't really exactly say that, but what it does say is when your blood vessel, when you're at 8 gallons, not 10.5, but 8.5 gallons, your system shuts down a little bit to get the blood to the most important places. Okay, that's a key concept. So when you're opening it up, you can have a temporary increase in blood pressure to try to open up the shutdown capillaries and arterioles. So, but it's not an illusion, it really happens, but then it goes away. It's the system adjusts to more fluid because you have more salt, which is holding more water, which is then improving your blood volume, and then it's opening up. And then your blood pressure comes back down. So those are some thoughts.
Let me ask you just two questions about what you just said. First, for the people that don't want to take fish oil, is algae oil a perfect substitute?
Yeah, so algae oil is fine, but most algae oil just has EPA or DHA. And you got to get one that has both. You need both. High D, so DHA is the longer chain omega-3 fatty acid, and it's very important for fetal development, brain development, eye development. And the idea was, well, let's give DHA to these mothers, and it'll help with fetal development and all. But the brain is the manufacturer of DHA from EPA, and the human brain, over 90% of the DHA is manufactured in the brain. So EPA has actually been shown to be more effective in depression and anxiety and in other brain disorders than DHA. So DHA has its own benefits. We need We need it as well, but if we just are getting DHA alone, it's not going to provide the same benefit as getting some EPA in there. So I like to see a ratio of about 2 to 1 EPA to DHA. I think that's the ideal ratio. That's what we see typically in nature and in a lot of fish. I think that's the way to go. So algae oils is great if you're a vegan and you need those omega-3 fatty acids, and you do. Studies have shown that vegans are woefully deficient in these longer chain omega-3 fatty acids. Although you can get alpha-linolenic acid, the short chain omega-3 fatty acid from flaxseed oil, chia seeds, and walnuts, it's poorly converted to the longer chain omega-3 fatty acids. So if you're going to use an algae oil, make sure it has both DHA and EPA. And again, I like that ratio of 2 to 1 EPA to DHA.
So I would agree with that. I get as a vegan cuisine, I don't do fish oil. There's a lot of contamination in it, but it's an animal, so I don't. But I use a thing, it's called Omega Zen, but basically, I'm not, I know we're not supposed to talk about products so much. It's DHA and EPA together in a ratio. And generally speaking, slightly various from what you just said, but generally speaking, you need to take them together, and you can get them from the yellow algae, just like the fish do. So we're copying the fish, and I run about 3 to 1 in the ratio. I mean, we don't really know for sure, but it's pretty close to what you just said. So you need to take EPA and DHA together, and you can easily get it from the yellow algae. So it's available, it's not a problem, and it's a must. For your pregnant mothers having the IQ of their kids, but also your own mental functioning.
Let me ask you one other thing. You mentioned salt. Now, you're saying that when they go to the highest quality mineral beds and they get the salt and the salt still hasn't been bleached, hasn't been heated, has 92 minerals, you're recommending that. What are you saying to someone who's
82
that,
minerals.
how much,
82.
82? What with in terms of table salt, are you saying avoid table salt, or are you saying to take this special salt? But when it comes to table salt, the same one that so many people are saying not to take, are you saying to avoid table salt?
I avoid table salt. I will only use this other salt, and I'll use about a teaspoon to a teaspoon and a half. A day, but I'm also putting it in all my water and everything I do. So I am definitely saying a table salt isn't so good for you. And that's why I agree with people say avoid salt, because they're talking about table salt,
I
sodium
think that
chloride.
a high intake of sodium from any source is very detrimental to our health. There's just too much research to support that. So if you're going to use any form of salt, a Celtic sea salt or Himalayan sea salt or any of these other Dead Sea salts or whatever, you have to be careful. Anything over just a, I mean, our body only needs about 200 milligrams of sodium a day to function. What's really important is potassium. I utilize a potassium sea salt. It has a ratio of 2 to 1 potassium to sodium. So that's what I use to get my potassium intake up. What people are really lacking isn't the sodium, it's the potassium. And potassium is what our cells are striving to pump in. And it's a hard job. We can make it easier if we have a high potassium diet. And if you use a high potassium salt, then you're helping your body out, because there's a gradient that is created that allows that potassium easier entry into our cells.
Yeah. And it's key to have the proper sodium potassium ratio, I think that's important as part of that. Not in the thing, but in your own body. You know, a hair test can give you that ratio, and it's worth measuring it to see where you stand.
Yeah, and just to give people an idea, our body needs about 5 grams of potassium each day. And I just told you that we can do fine on as low as 200 milligrams of sodium. So that shows you that we need a lot more potassium in our diet and in our salt than we do sodium.
Dr. Cousins, you've recommended as much as a teaspoon and a half a day of salt. Is that for everyone, or is that for only people that are salt deficient?
There's a high amount of people who are mineral deficient. Can I use that word? Not salt deficient. And so what I recommend is an 82 mineral salt. That's all natural and hasn't been cooked and hasn't been heated and so forth. And not from the sea, because the ocean is so polluted. It varies. We are unique human beings. You know, we have chromosome 19 says how much fat and protein and carbohydrate we need, and it varies. Okay, generally speaking, in my practice, I'm still seeing clients, you know, around the world. A teaspoon to a teaspoon and a half is what most people seem to test for and what they need. That's how I would put it.
Okay. All right. Dr. Murray, your first answer was fantastic. It told us multivitamin D3, omega-3 fatty acid, antioxidant. If you had to go further, we didn't discuss B12, vitamin C. We didn't talk about chlorella, spirulina, blue-green algae, zinc, magnesium, potassium. Keep going with the list. In other words, we really don't know. As much as you guys might think we know it, you gave us a list of a bunch of things, plus carnosine, 82 mineral salt, water, oxygen, and exercise. Keep going with the list. What else should most people be adding as the umbrella of a stable base that just about everyone would want before we go into a different condition?
So, you know, the caveat in my recommendation of taking a high potency multiple vitamin and mineral formula was to make sure that it provided the recommended dietary allowance for all known essential micronutrients. A case in point would be looking at magnesium. Our body needs about 350 to 450 milligrams of magnesium per day. That's the RDA. In order to get that in a supplement, you're going to be having to take usually 3 to 6 capsules or tablets a day. Magnesium intake is roughly about 50% of the RDA for over half of the people living in America. So most people are not getting anywhere near the level of magnesium that their body requires. And, you know, there are 16 essential minerals, and minerals are just as important as vitamins. Vitamins and minerals basically function in our body as components of enzymes. And enzymes are molecules that build other molecules or break them down. Enzymes have two arms. One arm holds a vitamin, the other arm holds a mineral. You can have all the vitamin C, B1, vitamin D3, vitamin A. You can have sufficient levels of all your vitamins. But if that enzyme needs a mineral, and as I said, there are 16 known essential minerals, that enzyme can't do its job. So we need both the minerals and the vitamins. So that's really a key thing. Another thing to take into consideration is that many pharmaceuticals, both over-the-counter and prescription, induce nutrient deficiencies. So if you're on any sort of medication, you need to understand if it carries with it the likelihood of causing a nutritional insufficiency, and that creates another need to take a dietary supplement to make sure that your levels are where they should be. So vitamins and minerals, they have to be replenished. We lose them in our in our feces, in our urine, in our sweat, in our biochemical reactions. This term antioxidant gets used over and over again, and people don't understand that there are as many different forms of antioxidants as there are musical instruments. And sure, you can make a nice song out of a trombone, but to really have something spectacular, you want that whole orchestra. And as far as protecting your body against damage, you need all these different antioxidants, and they work as part of a system. Different antioxidants work differently than others, and so that's where diet comes into play, and that's where supplementation also comes into play, because we have these nutritional antioxidants like selenium and zinc and vitamin E and vitamin C, but we need these plant-based antioxidants as well. And we can talk for days about the value of these different plant-based antioxidants.
So how do we get those 16 minerals? Should we go to the store and get a list of the 16 minerals and buy one that has a combination and take that every day? Like, what should we add to our list regarding minerals?
Well, as I said, you need to. I like taking a good high potency multiple vitamin and mineral formula that has the recommended dietary allowance for all the vitamins and minerals. And that's kind of a good insurance policy. But a lot of people don't want to be taking, 3 to 6 tablets a day. So they go with a one a day or a two a day. And typically, what manufacturers do then is they just eliminate the minerals because they take up more space. So people may need to look to specific mineral supplements. For magnesium, what I do, I take my magnesium at night. Magnesium has been shown to promote a feeling of calm. It promotes a good night's sleep. It reduces insomnia, improves sleep quality. So taking it at night, 250 to 500 milligrams, and I like the easily ionized forms like citrate, malate, or bisglycinate. You can mix it in with just about anything. Mixes fine with water. I like it in coconut milk just to make it taste. I use a berry flavored magnesium citrate and use a hand mixer, and it's just a good nighttime toddy to get a better night's sleep. So that's one way to do it. I'm not that concerned about calcium. I think the RDA for calcium has been overinflated to help the milk industry. But if you look at the rate of osteoporosis worldwide, it's highest in high milk consuming countries, and it's tends to be lower in those countries where they get ample calcium, but it's mainly from green leafy vegetables and other plant sources. So I don't worry too much about calcium. Some of it is in my multiple, but I get a lot of calcium in my diet. A glass of kale juice has as much as a glass of milk.
So you're saying that a multivitamin and mineral takes care of your mineral needs, except for maybe 250 to 500 milligrams of magnesium at night? Is that
Well, yeah, it really depends on the formulation. If you take a high potency multiple vitamin and mineral, it may have 100% of the RDA for magnesium, and so you may not need to take any additional magnesium, but very few people take those sort of high potency multiples. So a lot of people seem to just they don't want to take that many pills, so I'm giving them an option there.
okay.
So I think magnesium, about 80% of the population is deficient in magnesium.
Yeah,
And it's a
I would agree.
super important thing for your heart, actually for your brain. It's one of the four main kind of active ingredients for neuron function.
Yeah.
So I really support that.
Yeah, well, as I said, these minerals, they work in our body is in biochemical reactions, and magnesium is involved in more biochemical reactions than pretty much all the other minerals combined.
At
So,
least 300,
yeah,
right?
it's more like 3,000. It's
2,000.
3,000 different biochemical reactions. And if you think about that, it makes you wonder if many people are suffering simply because they're not getting enough magnesium. There are about 60 different health conditions that have been convincingly linked to low magnesium levels. And I agree with Dr. Cousins. Magnesium insufficiency is a huge problem in North America, and it's a reflection of how our diets has changed, how the food supply has changed, and it's one supplement that I think can really make a huge difference in the way people feel, the way people think, how much energy they have. It's to make energy in our body, we need magnesium. So if you're deficient, you're just going to have all sorts of issues, and most people do. You need
So
it
if
for
we
insulin action. You need it for your metabolism. It's really important.
so when it comes to minerals, though, if we take a multivitamin mineral and we take magnesium, are you both saying that covers most people? Or are you saying no, we should also take zinc or selenium or copper? Like, I mean, what we're coming away with the understanding that if we take a multivitamin and we take this magnesium, that we're covered on our minerals. If there's
Well,
more.
we have to be careful about word covered. Again, chromosome 19 makes a point that we are unique individuals. So we have different metabolic and nutrient needs. Like 70% of the population needs a higher protein diet, and 30% needs a lower protein. Okay, that's one example. So we really vary. So we have to be, to me, very careful. Back to magnesium for a second. We do a lot of fasting retreats. I use an angstrom magnesium, which is really ionic size, and it's a liquid because a lot of people get spasms. Well, let's start taking the magnesium ahead of time because 80% are deficient in magnesium. That's not a good starting point. You need it for your, heart function and muscle function, brain function. So I'm kind of looking that way about it. Now, I want to go back to one topic, carnosine, because you kind of had a puzzled look on your face, okay? And carnosine is needed for preventing glycation. Glycation is when sugar links with protein in the body and deactivates it, roughly speaking. And carnosine helps protect against that glycation effect and really significantly protects us from having our protein deactivated. So that's why I mentioned that, okay?
Where does that come from? Does that come from animal products?
We make
Well,
we
that.
make carnosine. We make carnosine from the amino acids histidine and alanine. And if there are low carnosines, if people have low carnosine levels, it's probably a reflection of a lack of the nutrients that are required to manufacture carnosine. But it's something that our body should be able to manufacture. It's very easy for the body to bind histidine and alanine together. So, but as far as diet goes, it's primarily found in meat and animal products.
Correct.
So it's possible that in a vegetarian diet, they may require perhaps some carnosine supplementation. But I'm not sure in an omnivore diet that it's as critical as some of the other things, because it's something that our body can easily make.
It comes mostly from meat, is what Michael's saying here. So if you're vegan, it's a little bit of concern, but you load up with those amino acids, which are available in a variety of ways, and then the task is stimulating our body to produce the carnosine. And I think that's the, a key thing in that discussion, because we do need it to protect our protein.
Okay, So one last time on the minerals. We're talking about zinc, potassium, calcium, selenium. You're saying that it's different for every person, but the only general rule you're saying is take a multivitamin and take angstrom magnesium or other magnesium. But there's no other mineral that you're saying everyone should take zinc. You're not saying that every man should take zinc or everyone should take
Yeah,
potassium.
I'm saying that everyone should be taking a multiple vitamin
In
and mineral
addition to that.
formula. If they're not, then they're going to have to take all these nutrients individually, and I'm recommend they take them at the RDA level. And a good multiple will generally have all the trace minerals. As I said, there are 16 essential minerals. We have the macro minerals that we need in larger amounts: calcium, phosphorus, potassium, sodium, magnesium, chloride, and sulfur. So we generally can get those in good amounts from our diet, with the exception of magnesium and possibly sulfur. As far as sulfur goes, I like MSM. I think it has it's that's the physiological form of sulfur. It's something that I've taken for years. It's just a good insurance that you're getting enough of sulfur. And sulfur is used by our body not only to make strong, healthy nails, hair and skin and joint tissue, but it's also involved in a lot of detoxification reactions. So our body is constantly getting rid of sulfur because of its protective effects. So I do think that MSM is kind of the next level of supplement that I would recommend from a mineral perspective. And there may be others just based upon certain things.
I basically agree with what Dr. Murray is saying. I also want to talk about eating that most people eat too much. So the research shows that when you eat less, you live longer. So I'm just making that point. It isn't just amounts, it's also, eating less, you get significant improved longevity.
And are there any supplements or minerals that we should be concerned about getting too much of? Or are there any that are hard on the kidneys? In other words, I've heard that calcium it could be bad. So is there any supplements that you're concerned about that we could take too much of or it could hurt us?
Well, yeah, one of the things that we have to realize is that there's an interaction in the absorption of all these minerals. And if you load up on calcium, for example, it's going to interfere with the absorption of magnesium and some of the trace minerals as well. And that's another reason why I think we need to rethink the whole calcium story. A lot of people or a lot of women especially are taking massive amounts of calcium thinking it's going to be beneficial to their bones, but the research is quite clear. More is not better in terms of calcium. When they looked at studies where they gave 600 milligrams of calcium with vitamin D3 versus those that gave 1500 milligrams of calcium with vitamin D3, there was no significant difference. So I just think that the whole calcium story needs to be looked at and expressed differently than it is by many of the so-called nutritional and medical experts in the world these days.
Also, I don't recommend taking calcium magnesium at the same time. They do compete with each other. So I recommend taking it at different times. I don't really recommend very much calcium. People get enough of it. But magnesium needs to be taken separately in that way. I want to make a point of curcumin. Is another supplement because it's anti-inflammatory and it's really anti-aging. So I'm putting that in because you're asking for extra little little things. It does help to get some guidelines because heavy metals are an issue, and we need to, like a hair test is very accurate for heavy metals. Maybe not for everything else, but for heavy metals for sure. So we need to also think about some level of chelation intake. We're exposed to so much toxicity in the environment. So I think that that's another, I think, an important thing in this bigger picture. In terms of longevity, I just want to make one little point, is that a vegan diet increases the lifespan of women about 3.6 years, and for men it's 7.28 years. Now that's interesting statistic I've seen in a variety of places. So you can increase the lifespan by staying away from meat, fish, chicken, and dairy. But you got to do things like get your omega-3s, which are essential for brain function, IQ, and so forth, you know, from the yellow algae. So there isn't really a problem getting everything you need. Okay? The body can be programmed and activated by our intake to produce like what we need. Like the carnosine is an example of that. It comes from meat, but you can get it by bringing certain things into your diet that will stimulate production.
Okay, let me ask you a bunch of things, and kind of just tell me yes or no if you want to add this to the list. B12.
I think for vegans, an absolute must, no question. I would take methylcobalamin 1 to 2 milligrams a day. It's just too important. Their special needs based upon dietary practices, and that's one of them. Vegans definitely need to supplement with vitamin B12. I recommend the methylcobalamin, the more natural, more active form, and I also recommend if they're a good algae source of EPA and DHA.
I'm in agreement with that for sure. In fact, we've been basically agreement all along, right? So that's good.
I'm not much into dancing, but I'm definitely into moving.
Okay. One of the key things is to stimulate mitochondria production, because that's your energy factory in each cell. Okay. So the nitrous oxide type, there's supplements that support that. We want to decrease the free radicals, SOD, sodium oxide dismutase, is another protective thing to take in that way. So I'm just bringing those kind of to a little bit, because we've covered so many things. So I'm giving a few details here.
Okay.
So,
So continuing to our list, do you want to add chlorella, spirulina, or blue green algae is to the master list for everyone?
I do. I take blue green algae every day, E3 Live. I know we're not supposed to say brand numbers, but I've been involved since 1982 in doing research at Klamath Lake, where you can get it. There's no question it increases your mental abilities. It increases your IQ and increases your overall function. And they've done these tests with kids all over the world. A teaspoon of blue-green algae in kids, I think it was in Nicaragua, took kids that were the bottom of the class and they became the upper third of the class. So now, spirulina and chlorella I use as protein sources, along with the blue-green algae, in people who have a higher need for protein. They run about 60% protein, which is much higher than meat, fish, chicken, you know, which is 16, 17, 18%. We're talking 60% and 95% assimilation. So for people who need a protein, and people, vegetarians generally do, vegans do, everybody needs protein. I recommend those, the spirulina and Clairol. Okay, the blue-green algae I use for brain function. It's again 60% absorbed, 60% protein, and up to 90, 95% absorbed. So they play a role, but it's not the same for everybody. And I think that's the point I'm trying to make, is that we are unique individuals. We're not a bunch of cows that just eat grass.
I agree that we're unique individuals and we have our own biochemical individuality. There are some essential nutrients that everyone requires to get from our diet. And if we don't get those nutrients, our health is in peril. And so I think that's what Stephen's trying to get here is what are some of these key nutrients and what are good sources of them. I think adding some sort of super greens drink on a regular basis is really important. That for me, it's kind of a daily routine. I mix them up, and it might be matcha, it might be spirulina, it might be chlorella, might be blue green algae, it might be barley grass juice. I use these dehydrated super greens and I kind of rotate them. I think that's what we should be doing with most of our foods. Most people are eating the same foods over and over and over again, and we know that variety is very important for the microbiome and very important for our health. If we eat the same nuts every day, not as good as eating a variety. If we eat the same berry every day, it's not the same as eating a variety. And I think it's true if we're eating the same greens every day. We need a variety of these foods. The greater your variety, the better your health is going to be.
I'm going to add tea here, green tea.
I said matcha, but yeah.
Yeah.
I don't add green tea to my protein shakes, but I will add matcha.
it's a good thing. It decreases dementia, the risk of dementia, and it has theanine in it, which
Hey,
is
Stephen,
proactive.
I've got a good brain twister for most people out there, and that is what food has shown the most promise as a longevity aid, and I'm talking about a type of food. What type of food, if we look globally, intake may explain why people live longer in certain geographical areas than others. I'll give you a hint. It contains what Bruce Ames referred to as the longevity vitamin, which is ergothioneine. I'm talking about mushrooms. And mushrooms are in the news. There's a lot of popularity increase with mushrooms. Mushrooms are something that we need to consume in our diet, and we may also want to consider taking mushroom supplements. All mushrooms contain this ergothioneine, and this compound exerts some of the same effects in our cells as glutathione. The difference is glutathione is composed of three amino acids. Ergothioneine is a single sulfur-containing amino acid, and it's involved in helping to protect mitochondria, helping to improve energy production, and it also has an ability to help us get rid of some of these forever compounds in our body. If we look globally, those areas where people are eating the most mushrooms are also associated with longer life. So there's some evidence to support the idea that Ergothionine truly is a longevity vitamin.
I really agree with the mushrooms. I have mushrooms almost every day, actually.
Yeah,
You
they're
mean?
really easy to include in your diet now. I mean, gosh, you can go to the stores and you get organic mushrooms and you saute them in some olive oil and let them really break down a lot. They're a fabulous side dish, easy to prepare. No excuse for people not to bring them into their diet unless they don't like them. But who doesn't like mushrooms? They're fabulous.
And from a supplement standpoint, are we talking about medicinal mushrooms like reishi and
Yeah.
cordyceps? Is that what you
Yeah,
mean?
they all have the ergothionine. You can also get ergothionine as a dietary supplement. If we look at what is a reasonable intake for promoting longevity, it looks to be about 10 milligrams. So you'll see ergothionine in 5 to 10 milligram capsules. I think that's a good goal for both diet and supplementation in terms of where you get it from your diet. If you're having a 6 to 8 ounce serving of mushrooms 3 or 4 times a week, you're probably at that same level.
Okay, I'm going to ask you both to try to answer the next 25 questions with a yes or a no so that I can get your opinion on 25 different things that we would like your expertise on. So, this list we've been making, what about vitamin C? Does that make the list?
Vitamin C, yes.
In terms of what is the list supposed to be?
This is
What
the
is the goal of the
general,
list?
super all recommended
It's
for
a
everyone.
yes/no list.
That
Yeah.
everyone should basically have be
So
taking.
I don't take much vitamin C beyond the RDA. So I really I haven't taken mega doses of vitamin C in a long time. So I do not take a separate vitamin C supplement. So, and I take 27 different supplements. If people are interested, they can go to my website, drmurray.com, and I have my personalized supplement list there, and you won't see vitamin C. I don't take vitamin C.
I take a vitamin C complex, not high doses, about 400 milligrams. That's very low, but it has rutin and hesperin, which protects your veins, and it's a complex rather than vitamin C ascorbic acid, which tends to make your body acid. And I just want to make one other point. Alkalinity is extremely important. We can easily check our acid-alkaline balance by checking our midstream first urine in the morning. It should be between 6.4 and 7.2. And if you're doing that, that means that's the optimum measure of really where your blood should be. So I'm mentioning that because you got to be careful about things that are too acid, but also too alkaline.
Continuing with the list, what about digestive enzymes?
Again, it's a yes/no, but what I have noted in people is usually by the time they're in their 40s, their digestive power tends to go down. And you can take enzymes, which for many people is the easiest and a good thing, like a half hour to an hour after eating, when it's time to really digest after you've eaten. And by stimulating your digestive forces, you don't need to necessarily take digestive enzymes.
Okay. Next question.
Wait, Michael didn't get in.
Oh, he didn't answer on digest. Sorry, go ahead. Digestive enzyme.
I'm fine. I'm fine with that. That's good. Let's go to the
Okay.
next one. You got 25 of them. We've done two.
Yeah, so the big one, probiotics.
Well, we tend to make our own, like kimchi. I like it a little spicy because I'm more kapha in my. So I think it's good, but I think taking it more naturally rather than as a supplement is a better way to go because it's more alive and has more energy.
Okay. How about
Wait,
iodine?
you
I'm
keep
sorry.
wait, wait, wait,
Sorry,
wait.
sorry. Interrupt. Go ahead.
I think they have some specific uses, but for general recommendation I agree that it may not be necessary. That if we eat a varied diet, the biggest we get caught up with these probiotics, but the ones that are out there are commercialized because they're easy to grow and they're not so important in our body. So we're starting to see newer versions of probiotics that really have some significance. But right now, focusing on lactobacillus and bifidobacteria and some of these lactic acid bacteria, it may not be all that important for us. We can get more by focusing on diet.
Okay. What about the people like David Wolf who promotes charcoal, shilajit, zeolites for like, I guess, bind, I don't want to mis-explain it, but binding to certain
Yeah,
things?
I'll jump in on that. So I'm not a fan of bentonite. That was way back, and it's coming back as well. Bentonite's high in aluminum. Shilajit is problematic. Lots of different heavy metals in there. Charcoal, yeah, it has some benefits in binding gas and helping perhaps with poisoning, but in terms of helping us really improve our health, I don't take it. I take nearly 30 things every day. That's not one of them.
Okay, so I happen to be the same, except for Shilajit. Now, Shilajit is problematic. I have found one, I've tested about 30 different Shilajits on the market, and I have found one Shilajit. So, having lived in India, Shilajit's a really big deal, okay? It all seems to be contaminated. Mostly comes from the Himalayas, but there is one. People keep writing notes. What is the one? What is the name? We're not doing products here, as far as I understand. But it's possible to get a good Shilajit.
You could say if there's a Shilajit that you like, go ahead.
Yeah, it's high mountain Shilajit.
Okay.
It's from a competing company, that's Ron Tea Garden's company,
Okay.
But it is important. It is called the mountain power. So when you take it, it's the power of the mountain. Different ways of thinking about herbs, but that would be a way of understanding it.
What would you say to women if, in terms of we made this whole list, we've gone through it, but specifically for women, and let's say women over 50, what
Well, let's
additional.
first talk about women in general. The most common nutrient deficiency in the world is iron deficiency, and we were talking about special nutrients for vegans. This is another nutrient that they should really consider supplementing, particularly if they're a woman of childbearing age, because they're losing a lot of iron. So iron is really, really, really critical. Over the age of 50, we don't usually need the iron, but I think women in general, they should get a test called the serum ferritin test, and that will measure your body iron stores. And the way that any person feels when their ferritin level is 20 or below is much different than when it's 50 and above. You want that 50 and above ferritin level, because that means your body is saturated with the sufficient amount of iron it needs to deliver oxygen to your cells and take away that carbon dioxide. So I encourage women to get an annual serum ferritin level and make sure that you're in that 50 plus range.
And the downside to iron is it can accumulate in your brain and cause cognitive decline. So, and that's more a danger for women once they've stopped menstruating.
Yeah, it has to do more with the influence of some factors related to iron metabolism versus iron intake. You can have people that are severely iron deficient, but they are depositing iron in their brain because of various factors. For example, fatty liver disease leads to disruptions of our main balancer of iron, and as a result, we see iron accumulating in soft tissues instead of being delivered for red blood cell production.
And more of an issue again after menopause.
For people that are very concerned about their bones, osteoporosis, maybe other bone issues, they don't want to have a hip fracture. What exactly should they do, aside from lifting weights?
Well, you don't say aside from lifting weights, that's the key. Anti-gravity exercises. They did a study with women in their 90s, and they found when they were doing anti-gravity exercises, which includes weights, there was a 1% increase in their bone density per month. That's a pretty big statement.
Yeah.
So I think that that is one of the most important things we can do. I mean, you can walk, you can do this, but actually, walking with weights in your hand is a very a powerful way to protect against osteoporosis.
And one of the fundamentals of good medicine is eliminating obstacles to a cure. And with bone health, we know what those obstacles are. Beyond physical activity and weight-bearing exercise, a diet that is too high in sugar and too high in acid ash and too high in phosphates from soft drinks and whatever. These are some of the real culprits that lead to osteoporosis. So that has to be addressed. But we're learning more and more how complex bone is. We think of bone as just being kind of dead tissue because we see these skeletons, but bone is dynamic. It's dynamic living tissue, and it requires a steady stream of virtually every known nutrient, and a deficiency of any of a number of nutrients can lead to osteoporosis. Collagen, which is the main protein of the body, serves as the scaffolding of bone, not just connective tissue like ligaments and cartilage and the health of the skin. Collagen is very important to the health of the bone. And vitamin K2, it anchors calcium into bone. We're learning more and more just how important good nutrition is. And virtually all these essential nutrients are involved in bone health. It's not just calcium, it's all these other nutrients as well, all the B vitamins, all the various minerals and trace minerals. Everything's involved in bone health. So if you want to have healthy bones, you've got to have a healthy diet. You got to be on a strong nutritional supplementation program. You've got to exercise. You know, I always get asked the question, what's the single most important thing to do about X, Y, and Z? What's the most important supplement to take for X, Y, and Z? And I'm always reminded to a patient of mine, Dean. Dean had a very, very severe genetic defect, and he was the oldest living person with this defect. He went through three kidney transplants before he was 21 years old, and his life was full of pain and suffering. And I asked him once why he was doing all this, his answer both inspired me and broke my heart. He said, "Dr. Murray, all I can do is all I can do. So why wouldn't I do all that I can do?" And in most cases, people's health is in their hands. So whatever we're talking about, do everything you possibly can to be as healthy as you possibly can, and live like this inspiration that I had, Dean.
Okay, well, we're out of time, so just answer this in 10 seconds. This 5-hour question I'm about to ask you. What do you do to keep your memory good?
Well, we suffer from, with age, increasing brain inflammation. Okay? And one of the things that I think is important, and there are a lot of things that can help, you know, memory, go to cola and ginkgo biloba. Luteolin. And what's luteolin? It's specific for brain inflammation. That's the point I'm making. So with age, we need to do everything we can. A vegan diet will decrease brain inflammation. Okay? Exercising will increase it. Vitamin C, green tea helps with brain inflammation. Quercetin. And they're all kind of antioxidants at different levels. But the most important and the one that's least talked about is luteolin, which is extremely potent for decreasing brain inflammation. When you decrease brain inflammation, you improve memory, all your mental functioning. Now, the blue-green algae is also extremely good for dealing with memory and clarity of mind. So blue-green algae actually is a bigger player from Klamath Lake. So those are the simple little suggestions. The luteolin, we don't mention much.
In a nutshell, what's good for your heart is also good for your brain. So all the things that you've heard over the years that are good for your heart are also very good for your brain. Everything that you've heard about that is good for mitochondrial function, coenzyme Q10, PQQ, is good for your brain. Spices are very good for your brain. Curcumin is the only substance studied to date that's been shown to protect the specific areas of the brain that get affected with Alzheimer's disease. So, it's a 5-hour answer to give you in 10 seconds, but those would be my
I
recommendations.
just want to mention one more thing is iodine. The research really shows that iodine improves brain function, but also heart function and really all the mitochondria in the whole system need it. So I mentioned that as something to consider. Many people, I think we're looking at 95% of the population is iodine deficient, and so that would be definitely a supplement for brain function. And I've seen it work because I use it a lot for people.
Okay, Dr. Cousins will be speaking again. So look on this calendar to see when he's speaking again. Dr. Murray, if people want to stay in touch with you, what's the best way? Do you do private consultations? Do you go to your website? What's the best way to keep up with
Yeah,
you?
the best way to is to get to my website, drmurray.com. I put out a weekly newsletter. I also put together this program called Thrive, which is a crystallization of 21 lessons that I'm going to give you, 5-minute video, 5-minute worksheet that I hope will change your life. These are the tools and tricks and biohacks that I've used to live a life full of passion and joy, peace and happiness.
Fantastic. Dr. Cousins, how do they follow up with you?
Well, they can go to drcousins.com or treeoflife.mn.co. Easy for people to be drcousins.com. That's the easiest way to go about that.
Well, I really appreciate it. This information is not easy to get. It's not easy to get from regular doctors. It's not easy to get from anyone. And the fact that you guys have put in so much time to figure this out for yourselves and you're sharing it for free with us, I consider this invaluable. So thank you very much. And if we could unmute everyone else, that would be great.
Michael, it's good to see you and to work with you. Very nice.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. It was an honor.
Could unmute everyone so everyone
Hello.
else can.
The box, you know?
No, but it's the ones that were in the box.